Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with multi-sport athlete, Olympian, world champ and more, Emma Pooley.
Yeah, gone big dog.
Yeah, what a CV.
Hell of a CV.
Yeah, what have you done?
Yeah, I know. I am 6 weeks older than Emma.
Okay, and you always will be.
And I always will be.
So that's good.
And so, you know, comparatively, life goals and achievements.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah.
Sort of, my palmeras, as we may say, the accolades aren't as lined up as.
Yeah, you would have been the same school year maybe, so sort of direct contemporaries, yeah.
Oh, no, she might have been the year above.
Okay, well, you've got time then.
Okay, sure. No, I'll just get to the Olympics. It's going to be good.
Great. What have you been doing with your running, Ben?
Not a lot.
Okay.
I mean, just going running.
Okay.
That counts, right?
That's a thing.
That counts. Yeah. I keep forgetting, and I've got this 15-mile race in January, so I need to start considering that.
This is the Ben Fleet, isn't it?
So they've got that in, and I need to think about that, because we're sort of getting, where are we now? Mid-November. Latter stages of November. And Christmas is going to waylay plans as it does.
Yeah.
So I've probably got to start thinking about that a bit more.
Yeah.
So that's to be thought about. But that's about it, mate.
Nice.
Yeah. Just, you know, how's the getting massive weightlifting?
I'm still in the gym twice a week.
Great.
I've taken some heart from a recent study that showed that strength was more important than muscle mass in terms of factors. I think particularly in terms of cognitive decline.
But
it's quite a good use, kind of good news for the puny endurance athlete who likes to lift weights. Actually, even if you're not putting on huge amounts of bulk, you are doing some good kind of invisible stuff for your body and mind.
Wow.
So that's good. I've signed up for the Canterbury 10-miler.
Nice.
21st of January, a classic, similar to the kind of Cabbage Patch thing, kind of like club race. Obviously, Canterbury's an interesting town.
Sure.
Well-known cathedral.
Steeped in history.
And some steep hills as well, I think. So look forward to that. I feel like I'm putting it in to keep myself honest and to have some self-control over Christmas.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? The idea that this is coming up, I'd like to run a similar time to what I ran at the Cabbage Patch. So I need to be doing some decent training to allow that to happen, rather than just go off the reservation and be like, oh, right. Oh, it's 2024 and I've started it really unfit. So that's what it's there for.
Well done.
Thank you.
I might be off the reserve a little bit. But that's all right.
This is the Ben Fleet in January, is it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I think so. I have to check again. I keep forgetting.
I love how seriously you're taking this.
Well, yeah. I think panic is a really good motivator.
So, it is. So, a bit of fear is key.
A bit of fear will kick in and I'll be like, oh, I'm not that fit. So I'm going to go and do some stock half marathon training.
Okay.
And then just sort of like add some nuanced bits to cope with terrain and
the extra three miles.
Or 2 miles. Whatever it is. Yeah. So, I'll think about that soon.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Oh, that's good, mate.
Thanks.
Hey, look, I'm really into running news, you know, latest studies.
Good. Let's hear it.
And this one's about warming up and the necessity to warm up over different distances. Yeah, we all know that over 5K, doing a proper warm-up makes a difference. I think it was like 250-meter sprints, about four or five of those at like 80 to 90% of your kind of max intensity. Yeah. That can make a difference, a sort of notable difference to your finishing time. But a new study looked at whether that would be true of the marathon, and it found that actually it isn't. It isn't true. So we found no support to recommend PAPE strategies to improve endurance exercise performance over the marathon. PAPE is basically a warm-up with several sprints.
Sounds a little bit like insurance you were sold in the early 2000s. You've got to claim back.
They've moved into the marathon. And why might this be? Well, to state the obvious, the marathon is a seriously long distance and you should not go off too fast. or you burn off precious glycogen in the first mile or two. To accomplish this, you don't be too kind of overly primed at the start line. Don't be like absolutely ramped up, ready to sprint.
You're not off to do some strides.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. So better to kind of walk around a little bit, maybe do some skipping, maybe some kind of leg swings.
Or listen to a future podcast on plyometrics.
Yeah. Oh, some mild plyometrics. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. A little teaser there for everyone. Paying attention.
Yeah, coming up. There you go. So warming up, not necessarily something you need to do for marathon and by extension, kind of ultra marathon. I don't think you need to be going sort of doing strides before your the Barclay Marathon.
Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Because those shorter, sharper races, you want to get the heart rate up a little bit before you start running.
Totally.
Otherwise, you're going to feel a bit like, oh my God, I'm going. Where do I go?
Yeah.
But not, yeah. Unless you are, I assume, like going flat out marathon.
Yeah, someone said this on Twitter, I think, which is obviously an absolute hotbed of incredible
in-depth scientific research. Yeah, yeah.
But it's a fair point. If you were like, well, if you're running at Kipchoge pace, I mean, but then it's different because Kipchoge pace for Kipchoge, obviously, it's relatively.
It's all relative.
It is a higher, like, relatively higher intensity than if someone's going to run a 5-hour marathon.
Yeah.
But like, for him, he doesn't feel like he's going off sprinting. Although, if you and I did Kipchoge pace,
it's a full sprint.
Yeah, we wouldn't do a mile, would we? I don't think. Definitely wouldn't do a mile. Actually, sub 5-minute miling for the marathon. Anyway, he's pretty good, isn't he? So. It's so funny that man. I always think like, the other sport that I've enjoyed other than running is football, and I never thought like, oh, it's absolutely amazing that like David Beckham can score kind of free kicks that I can't. Mm. I never put myself in the equation like that, you know.
I know.
We've been running, it's like, oh, isn't it incredible how much better Kipchoge and Mo Farah are than me?
Isn't it how funny all elite athletes seem to be better than us?
Yeah, yeah.
Weird. It's like, it's just running.
It's almost like only impressive because you can't do it. Do you mean? Like, I couldn't do that. That's amazing. It's like, yeah, yeah, they are better than you. Get over it, eh?
Get over it, Rick.
Hey, you know who else is better than us?
Emma Pooley?
Your classmate, Emma Pooley, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right, okay. Guest of the week, here in the studio, guest of the week, sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown. Emma Pooley, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Sorry, I was late.
No, we can forgive lateness for an Olympian. I think we'll let you off. That's fine.
Not in the right sport, though. Not in the right sport.
Well, no, come on. I think that kudos you can carry with you forever, and it just gets you through passes to stuff. I think that's a good place for us to start. Most people probably know you as a cyclist, or certainly if they haven't followed your career from cycling, that's probably where they know you. So, world champ, national champ, Olympic silver medalist in Beijing. Yes. So cycling, obviously, you're known as a sort of time trialist, and I had the pleasure of riding with Emma up a hill for about 30 seconds before she vanished and I was left behind.
We should have a rematch because I think you'd probably enjoy it.
yeah, fine.
Ride as much anymore.
But sort of, where did running fit in? From when I first met you and you were very much like cycling and that was your professional career, and now to where you are with running and representing Switzerland and all these sorts of things, where did running first, has it always been a constant in your life, or is it something that you've got into post-cycling?
It's weird being known as a cyclist because I would say that if I had to choose one thing in terms of sport that I am, it's a runner. Like, I've like in my heart, that's not too over the top. I started running, I think, when I was about 11. My dad used to run every morning, and my dad was a bit, you know, kind of my hero. And so I wanted to be just like my dad. So I wanted to go running with him. And so I started running with my dad or on my own, and got into cross country. It's a tiny bit at school. We didn't really do cross country, but there was a teacher at school who could see that I really enjoyed running, and gave me the entry form for like the county championships when I was 15. And that was my first cross country race. And I got a bit hooked on racing there, but I always just loved running. And to be honest, the cycling was a bit of almost like a mistake because I didn't want to be a cyclist. I got injured running as a student. So when I was studying in Cambridge, like I was even more into running, and I ran like, spent a lot of time running with a running club, and I overtrained, got a stress fracture, as lots of people do when they up their drinking a lot, and was told I couldn't run for 6 weeks, which was unbearable. And then I borrowed a bike just to do something else because I couldn't run. And I'll be honest, I hated cycling to start with because I was just cold and the bike didn't fit me and it was uncomfy and I didn't want to do it. And I couldn't wait to stop cycling and get back to running. But I guess I had some really nice people around me in cycling. I was in a Cambridge has got a really awesome cycling club and the student club was good. And so I ended up actually enjoying it despite the fact the bike didn't fit me. And that's why I kind of got into triathlon. But I always just wanted to run. And I think I was just aware that if I did as much running as I wanted to do, I got injured. So cycling became a way to cross train. Before, I think that was particularly common among distance runners. And so I did a bit of triathlon and then a friend persuaded me to go to a bike race. And that was how I got into bike racing. But it was not the plan. Like, I didn't want to be a cyclist. I didn't even do a bike race until I was 22. And then when I became a cyclist, none of the other cyclists went running. Like, that was definitely a no-no. So nowadays runners cycle for cross training. I've noticed more and more they do it for endurance and especially in the longer distances. It's still really unusual for cyclists to run, maybe in the off season a little bit. And I kept running throughout the season until 2008. I had a crash on my knee and I couldn't run for a while. And I noticed that, yes, I did race better if I didn't run. But a run was always the first thing I did after the end of the season. So I used to take my running shoes to World Champs. And the morning after the road race, I'd struggle out with a hangover, shuffle.
Yeah.
And have the worst sore legs ever from 5 kilometers or something. Yeah. So I was always a runner, really. And I got a bit sidetracked by cycling, I guess.
A small deviation.
Yeah. A deviation. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
But it is interesting what you say then about the sort of maybe the progression in how people have viewed running, especially cyclists, were very almost much of a generation which was like, if you're not, you know, there's that classic, if you're not sitting down, if you're not stand up, sit down, and if you're sitting down, lie down. Like, that was the sort of if you're not on your bike, then you shouldn't do anything.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think that, when I met you, you were definitely one of the people who was just like, I like doing other stuff. And you're off, running and yoga and all the sorts of bits and pieces. And now you've got, I think I saw that a guy finished Paris-Roubaix and then ran a marathon afterwards because he was he was training for an Ironman, professional cyclist. You know, it's really gone full circle in multi-sport.
Yeah.
And I think that's an area of life where you've sort of now really championed that multi-sport adventure, get outside and basically just however you want to do it and just get out and have an explore. Is that now kind of your main aim with anything that you do?
Yeah, I think that it's my personal aim to enjoy what I do and not be too fussy about what sport that is or even particularly how fast it is, because that's a fairly boring way to measure your life. It makes sense if you're a professional athlete, you have to measure things and be fast because that's kind of your job. But for the rest of us, and even for professionals, I think enjoyment is extremely important. And I think my aim is to now communicate that through, I'm not that great at social media, but the channels I do have, I try and communicate that because I think that's the main job. Your main job as an athlete, whatever level, is to encourage other people to do it and not put them off by sort of implying that it has to be fast to be worthwhile. That seems a bit sad to me. And I'm aware of the sponsorship model in sport, but I'm not that interested in selling stuff to people. I'm interested in communicating enjoyment and personal stories and experiences. So, yeah, and, variety is really good in many things. It's particularly healthy in sport and movement because too much of any one thing is a bit healthy. So too much time sitting on your saddle is not good for your backside and lots of other, and for example, a cyclist needs to do weight training in the off season or running or something, otherwise they end up with low bone density. And runners who just run tend to get injured. So I think diversity is really healthy in sport. It's interesting. I now coach junior athletics in Switzerland, and the National Federation is really keen on encouraging kids to be polysportive, they say, so diverse in the sports they can do for as long as possible before becoming specialised in a particular sport, which is really hard when kids are particularly talented in something to encourage them to keep doing the shot put.
Yeah.
Keep throwing that ball. It's really important.
For you, Emma, when you kind of focused on running, like obviously you're coming to running as like an elite sports person. So, but what bits did you feel like you had to get better at in terms of actually kind of mastering trail running?
Oh, that's a really good question, because I was really surprised how much it helped me in running to have been an elite athlete in a different sport. Just because I had years of endurance training, which it does add up. And I got older as well, obviously, which means that you like endurance improved. But there were some real, I have like really noticeable weaknesses, and it really annoys me, because there are some kind of lazy, everyone assumes in running that, you know, it's all about physical training and running uphill. And especially when I started racing and running again, after being a cyclist and a triathlete, people were like, oh, you're the cyclist, you know, wow, you're quite fast. And I was like, one, I'm not a cyclist. And two, running uphill has never been the problem. And so in terms of what does translate from cycling and therefore triathlon and multisport, running uphill is so similar to cycling. Like, it's all quads and suffering and lung capacity, basically, so VO2 max. So running uphill, I knew that was a relative strength to me. Running downhill, on the other hand, really challenging. And not just because I'm a cyclist. I'm sure there are plenty of people who could transition from cycling to running and be great at running downhill, especially, I think, if they've got mountain biking experience, because you learn that looking ahead thing and analysing the ground ahead of you, or not analysing it, just keeping on going. I, however, even as a teenager, I had ankle injuries running, so I've got really weak ankles. I don't really have any ligaments left on one side. I've torn the ligament so often, and that adds an element of fear to downhill running. And so the things that, to be more precise in answering your question, the things that I really have had to focus on and definitely haven't mastered are technical trails and downhills, and the rest of it is just physical. But downhill and technical stuff involves the mind as well, which I find much harder to, as soon as there's an element of fear, it's much harder to just put more work in and get better.
Because your natural your sort of defenses kick in, and then you're essentially making it much harder for your body, even though you don't want to. So because you're sort of then going, oh no, I'm gonna crash, and then you panic and all those sorts of things kick in.
Yeah, and I've had so many falls running as well, so they've never been quite as bad as the falls off my bike. But I appear to have a very well developed anxiety mechanism for falling over or falling off. So it's interesting, because in cycling, I didn't grow up racing in a peloton or riding in a peloton, so I was really nervous in the bunch. And I had phobia of descending for a while, that I was just incredibly lucky that I was coached by this guy called Tim Williams, who helped me get over it. But that wasn't mental training, it was technique training. But to some extent, in cycling, I had to address a similar thing, in that I was strong uphill, terrible downhill. And so I've been through it once in a different sport. But I would say, and this is controversial, other cyclists might not like this, but I think descending on a road bike is a lot simpler than running downhill fast on trails, because there's just more variation in what you're running on than on a road. So roads can vary, but it's basically generally a road. And you can often have seen it beforehand. And running, you only need one sodding little route, and there's all over. So I think it's harder to learn. And for a while, for quite a long time, I've beaten myself up about it, because I've lost so many races downhill or done worse. So I could have done a lot better at the World Champs in Thailand and the long course if I'd just been less rubbish downhill. But that's just the nature of the athlete I am, and I've made improvements. And I'm just, because it's not a common problem, doesn't mean it's not a valid problem. It's not something to be laughed at. It's pretty. So I'm trying not to beat myself up about it. And instead I go running with friends who are much better than me downhill and don't take the piss, but I try and copy them a bit and learn from them, and then it becomes fun. And then when things are fun, then it's always easier to get better at them.
I remember going running with a couple of guys who knew how to descend properly.
Right, yeah.
And the difference was absolutely unreal.
It's
like, I thought I was like kind of okay at going downhill, like, oh, quick feet and just keep moving. And it was out. It was a joke. They were gone in a matter of seconds.
It's a great thing to get good at, isn't it? Because there isn't a great physical cost to being good at going downhill. It's more a technique and mental thing. Yeah.
In fact, I think it's the other way around. Like, the slower you run, like running downhill slowly is more physically tiring because you break yourself with every single footstep. So I think it's not that it's like, it's obviously harder work running downhill than cycling downhill, but it's still, I think if you go fast, it's almost easier.
Yeah, yeah. Was it breaks off, brained off? That's the fell running
sounds
mantra.
Safe, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds safe, doesn't it? Yeah.
Was there then a tipping point for you, Emma, with running where it was suddenly, this would be a career again. This was going to be the career. Like, was it duathlon? Was it the triathlon? And when did it go? Oh, actually, now this is the sport that I'm going to do.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's not a career. It's like, running is never... Like, I'm sponsored by Salomon in that I get equipment from them because I think they're really good shoes, but I'm not paid...
Right.
Definitely not a professional runner. And actually don't want to be. That's a different matter. I think, but in terms of when I wanted to run, kind of as soon as I stopped being a professional athlete at the end of 2018, I think. And that was, I was doing triathlon mostly at the end of my career. And I decided to focus more on running because it works better around work. It's more time efficient, and I was already on the Swiss Salomon team, so I've always loved running on trails and in the mountains more than on the flat. So I knew I wanted to race, do some running races. I didn't know at what level. I just knew I loved running and I wanted to run lots.
That's good.
and the advantage, the Salomon link, and you know, I only got on the Salomon team. And it's only the Swiss Salomon team, I should add. It's not Salomon International, which is like a whole other level. You really are professional at that level, and I'm not good enough, and I don't aspire to it either. But I only got on the team thanks to, you know, knowing someone, you know, a friend who ran the team, and so I didn't really expect to do very well. And I guess over the years, I've tried different distances in trail running and mountain running, and had different injuries, and tried things out, and I'm really pleased. I've had a go at almost all the distances and really enjoyed it. And it's been really fun. And it always feels like a bit of a dream come true. Like, if I could look back at 16-year-old me, would have, like, this would have been like beyond their wildest dreams to race a world championship running. Though I definitely wasn't at that level as a teenager. And so it's more of a dream come true than cycling at the Olympics, because I didn't really dream of that.
So that's amazing to hear that. I think that a lot of people would be surprised to hear that, Emma, because it's like, as Ben was saying, you know, best known as a cyclist, but it's almost like you had this true love in running and you had a chance to kind of rekindle it slightly later in life. It's actually a really nice story, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I would have run anyway, because it was always my go-to time-efficient exercise method, you know. It's awesome to have had the chance to race at it as well. And at quite a high level, much higher than I expected to be capable of, actually.
Well, you did. Yeah. So I think you did yourself a disservice with the, because you've represented Switzerland now, like as a world championship. So I mean, you're obviously all right at this.
Decent, isn't it? Yeah, it's all right.
I mean, in terms of nations with people who can run up and down hills, I reckon Switzerland are pretty like up there. So.
They're pretty all right. Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah, and I've only been Swiss for 3 years, so I've lived here for long, like almost half my life now, and I got Swiss citizenship 3 years ago. It was quite a long application process and everything, and. But I knew that if I wanted to stay here, I wanted to stay here and I wanted to be able to vote here. So then I applied, and then I was like, oh, I could, you know, I saw the applications for the national team were open, and it's a bit of a weird one, right? So obviously I cycled for Great Britain and I did duathlon for Great Britain, and I would never have, not that they asked me, but if they had asked to cycle for Switzerland, I would have said no, because I feel like that would have been a betrayal of the input that EIS and, you know, the whole British system put into me as an athlete. I was massively, massively helped. And, you know, no athlete gets to an Olympics alone. And there were coaches. And I mean, I had a personal coach and my own training buddies, but there was a huge amount of support from British Cycling and EIS and coaches. And I have loyalty to them. But running, I never ran for Britain. So I felt like that was
That's fair game.
I think that's fair game, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah. And I don't think that it affects me either, because I would be so bad at a fell race. I'm here for shit. So I did one fell race when I was a student, and it was just, I think it might be one of the few races I've not finished. So anyway, yeah, I did the trial, the Swiss team, and made it. And yeah, I've done two world championships now for Switzerland in trail running. And I was 11th weirdly, 11th in the long course and 11th in the uphill, which are quite different races and, you know, quite different time. And but I don't seem to be able to quite crack the top 10, which is yeah.
How did it feel then, you know, sort of stepping up to that sort of standard again, like a world championships for you? I mean, are the two comparable? Did you get way more of a buzz from this than you ever did from cycling? Or
yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a how can I put it, it's quite a different vibe at a trail race than at a road race. So road racing is quite an aggressive sport, and then trail running, especially the longer races, they're fiercely competitive, but it's much less sort of hand-to-hand combat, if you like,
right.
Because
yeah.
you don't win a long trail race by doing the others in, if you see what I mean. You win by just surviving. And whereas road racing is very tactical, and you have to beat other people. And it's not always the strongest one that wins. I mean, time trialing is a bit different. All this is to say that I found this friendlier and more welcoming, actually.
Yeah.
It might be to do with my own personal anxieties around road racing. So I was quite nervous in the bunch, like I said, and I wasn't very good about calming my fears of crashing. And the time trial, you know, there's something about that ramp where everyone is watching you.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, you know, at Olympics, when you're on the ramp, you know that millions of people literally can see you and see every time you screw up. I wasn't very good under that pressure, despite the practice. I was fine at it, but inside, I found it very difficult and quite stressful. So the first World Champs I did in trail running was awesome, because I was in the long course and they're pretty chilled at the start, and I got to race it with my hero. So like, I remember like a few kilometers in, I looked right and there was Ida Nielsen, and I was like, wow, my hero. Didn't say anything, a bit uncool. But afterwards I bumped into her the day after, and I was like, oh, I'm so proud I got to race with you.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, that's nice. I'm interested in what does like a week like of training look like for you now? Like, because obviously you talked about the multi-sport aspect, but do you train now like a classic mountain runner, or is it a bit more varied?
I'm not sure how the classic mountain runner trains. For me, it's super season dependent. But in general, one thing I learned from cycling is to include as much cycling as possible in my training, which just because I know that I can do endurance training on the bike without the risk of injury. But there's some things that you obviously have to practice running, so downhill and translating everything to running. So when I was training for longer distances, less so this year, but the previous years I was aiming for sort of 100K races, and I would I think my magic session, obviously there's no single session that makes you a good runner, but the thing that I think I didn't invent, but I've definitely embraced, is doing a long ride and then a brick run. So like triathletes do, even if it's just 20 minutes, and it sort of almost translates the endurance into running endurance without all the impacts, risks, the risk of the impact injury. And so this year, instead of a typical week, this year when I was training for the more for vertical races, so like uphill only, I would, my key session was sort of VO2 max intervals, 3 minute intervals, really boring, but pretty much every week I went out and did, you know, started with 5x3 and went up, got up to 10x3 just before the world champs. And I've got this awesome training buddy called Bettina, and she does about one race a year, maybe two races a year. She's super strong. She could totally win races, but she's just not really that into racing. And she showed up with me at like 6 a.m. once a week to do these tedious intervals and keep me honest, as I put it, because it's so much easier with a buddy to do that kind of suffering. And then the rest of my training fitted a bit around those intervals, and I would try and do a longer ride at the weekend or in winter ski touring, because it's not great weather for cycling in the winter here. That's really vague.
I really like that idea about the brick session. I wonder if that's something that, because obviously some runners, you know, running is a big injury risk for a lot of runners, and
yeah,
a way of doing a long run, for instance.
I don't understand why more people don't do it. So what a brick, whether it's, yeah, so ski touring is pretty physical as well. It's not quite the same because of the downhill, but I've encouraged quite a few friends who are injury prone and training for longer stuff to try it. It's incredibly unpleasant to get back from a long ride when you're really tired and put your running shoes on and go out again. But it's, I'm at like N of one anecdotal evidence. I'm not a sports scientist. I can't prove it works, but I think it's a great solution if you can't do all the long runs you want to. My coach agrees, and he is a physiotherapist, so, you know, I'm sure he's right. And often, you know, you just got to, I often just tell myself, like, just do 5 minutes and see how you feel. And then sometimes you set off running after a hard ride and you're like, actually, this feels quite good. And then you keep going and you've done a 30-minute run. And, okay, 30 minutes is a nothing run if you're training for an ultra. But if you do it off the back of a 3-, 4-, 5-hour bike ride, then suddenly it's an endurance session. And I think you get a lot of mental strength from that, like getting home tired and going out again. It's a little bit like what you need at an aid station in an ultra where you've got to grab your bars and keep going. Just want to sit down and rest.
That's I'm going to do that.
I think it's good, isn't it? Yeah,
I think that's good. I don't really like doing really. I don't like doing really long runs. They hurt. Yeah. So this sounds good.
I love my runs so much, and at the moment I can't run.
No. Can we talk just about you've just got back from Peru, and I think in this sort of off the back of you talking about long rides and then running, I think bike packing across Peru to a race is probably the sort of the extreme version of that.
you made it sound more cool than it was. I really wanted to bike back across Peru, but I didn't quite have time, but it was just a little loop of that. It was pathetically short.
No, still.
Really.
To get to a start line on a bike sounds like a good way of sort of having a good explore and doing some training. And then and then the race itself, which sounded, oh no, you said you're injured and you had to do the shorter version of it. But the race in itself sounds like a great race.
Yeah, it was. So the Peru thing was, it came up really late in the season, the opportunity to go. And I've committed to traveling less for sport. I think it's it's important environmentally. I've actually just joined a group called the Green Runners, which I'm sure you know about. And so I said I wasn't going to fly anymore for races, like only fly if it's absolutely necessary, like, you know, family or emergency. And then the opportunity came up to go to Peru, because of my result at Sierra Zinal, and it was all sponsored by not by a equipment sponsor, which is important to me because I don't want to sell more stuff to people, but by the Swiss Embassy in Peru. So it was hypocritical of me to go, but it's only worth it for me to travel that far if I can include basically a holiday or some kind of cultural experience in it and share that with as many people as possible. So, I don't want to go to Peru and just lie on a beach because that's not really my kind of holiday anyway. So, and I would have probably tried to do some mountaineering there because, I mean, the Andes, how awesome. But I can't hike or run much at the moment. I've got a probably a stress fracture in my foot. So I, which is ironically the injury that got me into cycling. So I took my gravel bike and, I wanted to do a point-to-point ride, but logistics are tricky with bikepacking and, but I wanted to see more of the country and you see things from a very different angle, literally and metaphorically from a bike than from a car or from a bus. And so you get a bit closer to people and you talk to people and people want to know what the hell you're doing on a bicycle on your own in Peru. For me, it was also like, if you want to be boring, it was good acclimatization for the altitude and stuff. But which is, you could justify that way. But for me, it's how I like traveling through a country. I think, it's a nice way to connect to people who are often a bit surprised to see someone traveling in a different way. And, I met some amazing people and had some cool experiences. And for the first time ever, I wrote travel journal, let's call it, and put it on Strava of all places, mostly because I felt a bit selfish doing that journey. And I put it there and then people seemed to like reading it. So I kept going.
No, it was great. And, I read it. Yeah, it was good to sort of.
Okay.
I just think as you say, we've had the Green Runners on the podcast and we've spoken to them about travel. Yeah. And Damien is one of our columnists and he talks about not doing events and how he's sort of, you know, everyone's sort of deciding to, as you have, to travel less and to make decisions based purely on how they feel the grand scheme of the environment and the world is, rather than sort of chasing a PB at a certain race or that sort of stuff. So I like the idea. The reason why I wanted to talk, because there's, you know, if you're going to travel somewhere but you can get there by bike, or just even introducing a small element of interesting travel that's better for the world but also for you and gets you somewhere, I think it's really interesting.
I mean, like in Peru, the cycling didn't save me any carbon. Like it's not, I have to say, like right from the start, I didn't save me any flights because I couldn't cycle
difficult
that far
to,
in the
difficult
week
to cycle
I had.
To Peru, Erin. it's quite a long way. That
I didn't have the boats, that I was like, I really don't have time to get the boat to Peru.
The boat stuff's amazing though. I'd look into Southampton to New York.
Southampton to New York.
Yeah, well, look, if you want to get to New York, I've always wanted to do the New York Marathon. I was like, could I take a boat? And you can get a boat from Southampton to New York. It takes about 5 days.
There you go.
Only 5 days?
Yeah. It's kind
really
of like,
quick.
It's like a cruise, isn't it? It's like a cruise, yeah. And it's like, it's roughly the same
price. Yeah, but a cruise is like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sorry if your listeners are into cruises, but they're like being stuck on a ship with a load of, I mean, I like people, but not that many of them all at once. And it'd just be a blooming nightmare. And there's probably like one treadmill in the gym and you'll have to queue for 2 hours for it.
Yeah,
no,
that's
way.
True. That's true. Yeah, so there's a lot of drawbacks. What?
Yeah, 5 days, is doable, I guess.
Other than getting the boat to Peru and New York, Emma, what's the sporting plans over the next, say, 12 months, if everything goes well?
I don't plan to get a boat anywhere. I just wanted, like, local races. So within Europe, I can get a train anywhere. I don't have a car anymore and or car share if I have to. I don't want to be extreme about the environmental thing because it's not helpful and it puts people off, but just I wouldn't fly to a race in Europe anymore. It just doesn't make sense environmentally. And so that's the travel thing. Racing wise, I'm not sure. This year I did a lot of racing. It went pretty well. By my standards, I qualified for the uphill world champs, which was my big goal. And I, as you're within Switzerland in races that aren't that level, I did better than I expected. So I broke quite a few course records and I was pretty chuffed about it. I'm recently turned 41. So for the whole season, I was 40 and I kind of was worried I was past it, which is one of those things that happens when you get to a big number age, you kind of start worrying about getting old. And I was quite tough because it's the fastest I've ever run, actually. And so, yeah, screw you, age. shout out to all the 40 people in their 40s out there listening.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Really?
Yeah, no. Yeah. As I was looking at just before we spoke, I was looking at on Wikipedia or something, and I am like 6 weeks older than you or something like that. So. So, you know, I haven't got faster, which is annoying.
Still
so,
time, Ben.
Yeah, still time.
Still
so,
time, mate.
Still time. Yeah. Time. Still time.
But yeah, I had a good year, but I also put an awful lot of energy in, which is great. Like I love running, but by the time UTMB in September came around, I was kind of, I still loved running, but I was fed up of traveling even just by train. And I kind of said, oh, I'm not going to race anymore. I'm going to throw the towel in now while I still feel like I'm ahead of the game kind of thing. But, you know, so I think I'm not sure next year whether I will race, kind of try to race elite or do just a few local races and quietly get on with working. Working a bit harder than I did this year. yeah. And next year I'm going to have a book to sell because my book's going to come out in the spring. I really have to finish writing it, but then it's going to come out. So that's going to take a bit of time. And I think my primary focus will be local races with friends because I enjoy that more. And, you know, it's less time consuming and selling this damn book. And if I carry on racing, then I won't do as many. So there's a couple that I never quite got around to that I'm really keen on. So I'd like to try the Mont Blanc Marathon. And and I feel like maybe some unfinished business at UTMB. So maybe I'd try a qualify race for that. But I'm not sure that I want to make that a big goal because it takes over your life a bit. UTMB, I think.
Yeah. I was going to ask about UTMB and more if you had plans to go back. I mean, once you sort of, I guess once if you get a taste for it, then maybe it's sort of one of those races that you kind of, as you say, unfinished business.
I didn't much enjoy the taste I had of it.
No, mainly vomit.
Yeah, it made me so sick. Yeah, it was gross. Yeah. It was just very stressful, like the crowds and the shouting and stuff. And I mostly am used to running mostly on my own. And, you know, at a big event, there'll be people in some sections on the course, and that's very uplifting. You know, like CSE now is crazy and the World Champs is crazy. Crazy in a sort of short burst of craziness, and then you're quiet and you're in the woods and you're in the mountains on your own. And that's kind of how running is for me. And just the amount of noise at UTMB kind of
sort of sensory,
terrified me.
Sort of sensory overload kind of.
Yeah, that's exactly the right phrase. Thank you. Yeah, like sensory overload. And I just, I felt like a rabbit in the headlights. And I think that probably didn't help with my pacing and eating strategy because I was just like, how much faster? There's people screaming at me. Which is crazy. Like, you'd think after three Olympics, you'd be okay with crowds. But anyway, I didn't do that well. But I'm not sure what quite. But there is something about running around a mountain that is a really cool concept. But there are other races where you can do that. And but it is the big one. And so, you know, if you want to be a sponsored runner and have all that public recognition and stuff, then UTMB is the one you have to go for as an ultra runner. But don't really give a shit about that. I've got enough Salomon kit to last me the rest of my life. Sorry, Salomon, I love your shoes, but I don't need any more of them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to make a career out of running. I love it, but I do not want it to be my career.
Yeah.
It's not possible anyway, age 41. I've experienced being a professional athlete and it was a huge privilege, but it's not a particularly secure way to live your life.
Yeah.
And I'm an engineer and that's what I want to do. Like that's the work I want to do. And so, realistically UTMB, I'm not going to be that great. And then it's a bit of a high stress race to show up.
Yeah.
And
I think it wants to be like the number one goal, the priority, doesn't it? Otherwise,
I really like that. It is sort of always, it's always up on a pedestal.
Yeah, it's not for everyone,
It's not, it doesn't have to be.
It's not for me, Emma. I'm never going to do it.
I don't want to do it.
Oh, I found someone else. Good to know.
Yeah. Good God, no.
I'm happy to go along and sort of bang a drum or a cowbell, but I'm never doing it for crying out loud.
Yeah, so I'd quite like to go and support someone else because I think I'd be quite a good race supporter because, you know, when you've been at the user end of race support, you know, I did actually help out a bit at the World Champs with the long course after racing myself and I really enjoyed it. You feel like you can just give them a little bit of like positive energy and obviously their water and snacks and stuff. But yeah, I suppose the other thing with UTMB is having experienced different sports. So the UTMB is a bit like the Tour de France in cycling, which I'm upset that I never got to do. And yeah, anyway, that's a whole other story. But and for example, in triathlon, it's like Kona. It's the same business model. It's the same company that owns it now. The same, essentially the same model for qualification and all the sort of franchised events, and great for making money for the owners. Fantastic. And the way that works is by making the main event, that's the final, so whether it's Kona or UTMB, becomes a bit of a cult event, and it's the thing that everyone wants to do. And it's also a really cool event. Like, UTMB is a really cool event, but there's a bit of me, there's a bit of a rebel, and I, just because everyone else wants to do it, I don't. And so I had a go this year because I had a way of qualifying from IGA last year, and I thought, well, why not have a go? You know, I'm never going to qualify again. Why not give it a go? But I don't want to make it my massive goal, because I just, it's what everyone else wants to do. It makes me a bit kind of anti.
I think just running, I think there's huge amounts of joy in running on your own somewhere. That's why
there are great events, aren't there? Like, I think that's...
there's so many great events. And especially the, like, around where I really like local events that are run by local, like around here, they're often local ski clubs, and they raise money for their kids to go on training camp. And it kind of floats my boat more than making sure some investor somewhere has a shitload of money in his bank account. But I know like events have got to be profitable for them to keep being organized, but I'd rather do local friendly events where I could win a cheese. Because realistically, I'm never going to win any money at UTMB. So.
Good cheese.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Good cheese.
Great region for cheese,
Like a kilo slab of Gruyere at Zermatt this year. I had to have a party just to get rid of it.
Cheese party.
Love that.
Yeah, cheese party. Yeah.
Well, Emma, thank you so much for joining us to talk about running and the joys of running and your love for it, because that was it was great to hear that.
Thanks for having me.
Takes such a prominent role in your life now.
Yeah, I love it. I love other sports too, but I think I'll always love running the most. And can I briefly plug my book, which is coming out?
Oh, yeah, please.
It's not out yet, so you can't buy it, but you can get excited about it. The working title is Oat of This World, and it's a recipe book based on oats, obviously, like oat-based snacks that you can take with you on runs or bike rides, and or to the office if it's one of those days, and some stories from sport, and it'll be coming out in March or April next year.
Excellent.
No, I've pulled my finger out.
So there's
an Instagram account for this,
isn't there?
Well, you have to tell me what it is.
Yeah. I said I should have just put it on my Instagram, but I thought I'll do this Instagram thing for marketing my book. And it's called Oat of This World Recipes, and it's just pictures of OT snacks.
They're great snacks.
They're not even very good pictures, but don't worry, I'll get it.
I'll get
a photographer with a
But so, Emma, these are sort of like off the back of all of your like your life and training and for elite sport and how nutrition on the bike and all those sorts of things. Did you just still get to the stage where you're just like, I don't want to have any more gels, I'm bored of eating this stuff? Right.
Yeah, pretty spot on. So like, I've just got fed up of, energy bars have improved since when I started racing like 20 years ago, but don't name any brands, but they were the most sad, beige, tasteless lumps of crap. And I wanted to eat real food. I'm also super paranoid about doping, especially when I was cycling. Like, you know what? Cycling has such a bad reputation. You can't afford. And it was drilled into us. Nothing is safe. And sports products felt really risky. And they were expensive. And so in training, I wanted to eat real food that I could make myself. And so I started making my own. So they're all recipes that I invented for training with. And if I was good at marketing, I'd say, eat these, buy my book, make the recipes, you'll be world champion. Obviously, that's bullshit, so I won't say that. But
they're delicious. We can say they're delicious.
They're delicious and healthy, and you know exactly what went into them. And they're also really easy to make, most of them. So, there's no, you don't have to like puree a cucumber or something.
Oh, good.
You can, easy food. Easy,
that sounds good. Oat of This World coming up. Look out for it, listeners.
Thank you very much, Emma, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks very much.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Emma Pooley, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast to get exclusive. Or you could just subscribe to 12 issues of the magazine for the whole year. That's a good idea too. Please subscribe to this podcast. I'm sure you do already, but if you don't, do. Thanks for listening. You'll hear from us next week.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.